Just make sure the record got the correction picked up. Go ahead.
So, Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative.
For the record, is this a sales tax?
No.
No.
Of course not. This is a fee. No, it's a tax. No, it is a tax. Gee whiz. Okay.
I don't want to break
it. I'm sorry. I got mixed up myself. Then there are some, in Section 13, there are some exemptions, which I think are probably pro forma. And 14, 15, 16, and 17, and, well, just about up until 18, this is strictly the Department of Revenue, what they do when they collect taxes. Now we come into the part where we're amending existing law, and I've provided in your files all the underground storage tank existing statutes. You've got a little package of it. And what we'll be doing from here on out.
Huh? They've all read those.
I'm sure, but what they do here now is where you're going to find the definitions. In Section 20, here's the definitions, and on facility, page 8 at the top, you'll see what facility is. And here's what I was talking about, the motor oil, where I got mixed up. Facility, when we use it throughout, means one or a combination of underground tanks used to accumulate motor fuel, so not any other hazardous substances. This program, this specific program for loans and grants is for motor fuel, gas, which means gasoline or diesel.
So other types of tanks would not be applicable to
this. That's right. For this, just for this loan and grant program, what we're targeting is, you know, retail gasoline dealers, is basically independent retail gasoline dealers with this part of the program, with this.
Is there a provision in here that would make clear that they would have to be, or would they have to be, independent dealers?
No, it doesn't specifically say that. No, it doesn't. But the criteria for the priorities and the preferences and the loans and the grants are geared toward the independent dealers, the rural area, sort of on a descending, you know, on a scale. That doesn't mean other people couldn't apply for the loans, but we've got priority.
Mr. Chairman, originally we tried to draft this, and as it has been finally drafted in here, EQC will draft rules, giving preference to rural areas' ability, that sort of thing, financial ability.
It would be my understanding, be correct, that basically other gasoline dealers, that is the non-independent ones, probably have their insurance issues covered by the companies or not?
Mr. Chairman, that's my understanding.
Or self-insured, okay.
That's not always the case.
Right. But the big issue is the independent dealers.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
There on page 9 is the definition of soil remediation. Then section 21 is the policy statement, which it is, as you can see on page 10, everything in bold is what we're trying to accomplish with this program and why we're trying to do it. And I would call your attention to sub F there on line 15, which is to encourage private insurance carriers to re-enter the insurance market.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Keasley.
Just a small typo on 13, Carol, just for your information, to provide financially assistance.
Oh.
Sorry.
Financially. Thank you very much.
I don't know if it's stated here, but it seems to me that one of the issues we're dealing with, we understand that a lot of the, well, I guess you could call them the marginal dealers, that is the ones that are really financially strapped, this may not help much. Some of those people are already going under or having difficulties. But I think it would be correct to say, is it not, that the state has an interest in seeing not only that many of these people stay in business, small communities have an interest that they stay in business, but in addition to that, we don't want the problem to become so burdensome that people get up and just walk away and leave the facility, and then it's left to the state at some point to clean it up. Would that be a fair statement?
Very good.
Okay.
That's it.
Go ahead.
That's true, isn't it? That's pretty good. That's exactly it. Okay.
Right on cue.
It was wonderful. Section 22 is the provision for setting rules. And as you can see on from page 11 at the bottom through page 12, all these variety of things we've been talking about, and what the EQC will be setting rules for. And as always, I've noticed throughout the statute, EQC is never setting rules more stringent than the federal government, at least when it comes to these programs. And so we've also said the same thing there with soil assessment and tank tightness. Then we have for the overall fund preferences, this is page 12. If you look at lines 7 through 11, you'll see the overall fund preferences. This is what Representative Parkinson was talking to you about, what he hoped to accomplish and how he thought in what order they should be done. Then lines 12 through...
Why don't you read those, Carol? I think they're significant. Just read them into the record.
Okay, the methods for allocating monies in this fund that give preference, they're going to set rules now, EQC, to give preference to A, first to soil assessment and tank tightness testing, B, second to awarding hardship grants, and C, third to providing loan guarantees.
Thank you.
Then it follows on, is that right? Yes. Then it follows on with a system to give priorities for the hardship grants. That's beginning Q, and it goes through 12 through lines 12 through 20. And then if you'll
why don't you read that one, that too, Carol?
Okay. A system to give priorities in awarding hardship grants that take into consideration A, financial condition of the application. Gosh, that maybe should be applicant.
I think you're right.
Pardon me. B, the availability of motor fuel to rural population centers. C, whether a facility is certified by a local government or fire district as needed for emergency services. And D, whether a facility is certified by a local government as essential to the economic well-being of a specific regional area of the state with particular dependence on tourism. These are the criteria which they will set rules for hardship grants. The next lines 22 through 27, is a system of priorities for loan guarantees. And you will notice there that the first two, A and B, are similar to the grants. However, the loan guarantees, the priorities for those are the financial condition, availability of motor fuel to rural populations, small businesses, and whether the underground tank is a facility retaining motor fuel. That means it's a retail gasoline dealer. That's what that last line means, because that's who we meant to give these loans to. So that's, then you're over to 23, and it talks about, this is page 14, because these are amended sections, you can just go over there. This is an important section right here for the gasoline dealers. For a period when this act is effective up until September 1 of 1992, the department will not be able to not issue a permit because somebody doesn't have financial insurance. Assurances, that's what it's called. This is a big give on the part of the state to try to help take that onus off these people and to get them in compliance. Section 24, this is another way we're funding this program. It's an annual surcharge.
Let me come back again to the previous thing you just mentioned. What's the impact of that on the state, Rich? Can you respond to that? What does that really mean in terms of what the state's obligations will end up coming to?
Yeah. Mr. Chair, Richard Reiter with the Department of Environmental Quality. The reason this was brought up is that there is a state provision. It's not a federal provision. There is a state provision that would prevent gasoline from being distributed into a tank for retail sale if they're not in compliance with permit conditions. And so we've conceded that for purposes of the financial responsibility, since it's such a difficult provision to meet, that it would not be reasonable to prohibit fuel from being distributed to the gasoline stations.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, now we're on 20, oh, I just did that, 23. Okay, 24 is another way we're funding this program. And as I think Representative Parkins mentioned before, we, you know, it's like for 4 years. We have the tax for 4 years, basically, and then it's sunsetted, and we have this surcharge of $50 on every underground storage tank. This, again, for 4 years. Then we come into Section 25, which I would say to you needs a little further work. This is an existing fund right now for underground storage tank, as you can see, but what actually has no money in it has never been funded.
When was this established?
It sits.
Mr. Chair, it was originally established in 1987.
Was that part of the underground, the underground tank legislation?
It was part of Senate Bill 115.
It just sits there with no money in it.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Keesman.
I take it we've eliminated the Lust Cleanup Fund, no longer in statute,
that's
and
right.
Renamed it something
yes.
That's
they're
little,
not all leaking.
A little less interesting.
No, it's a Suction Cleanup Fund.
It's us. But anyway, this section attempts to talk about the fund and what the purposes of the fund are, and we think this needs to be a little more clarity in it because it doesn't, it isn't clear as to the fact that that the real purposes of that money are first for the loan program, and after September 1992, when we're not loaning anymore, what is then in the fund, aside from paying out administration and paying back whatever we have to have there to protect the guarantee of the loans and so forth, would then go into the program administration of the regular program of underground storage tank, and also, this is what we're proposing, for any remedial action at orphan sites connected with underground storage tanks. This section needs to be a little more clarified. From there on out, I would tell you, from 26, 27, 28, I believe, yes, 29, 31, except for, but I understand the balances of this act due, and I have talked to a Rich Ryder about this, but what we have here is a program that's only in effect for about 4 years, and as such, it's not going to stay in the law permanently. So Jeanette has provided for that occurrence by saying at a certain time sections of this act will be repealed. So what you have here in sections 26 and there, basically what we've done in other provisions, what we've amended into the law previously, from sections 26 on, we take it out again. Is that clear to anybody? But it has to do with that. And I don't think, Rich, I didn't miss anything here, did I? So basically, those in and out really have to make it sunset.
Good.
Thank you.
Questions?
Mr. Chairman, we've got to understand this. We're talking about 10 cents a quart per quart of motor oil for 4 years.
Yes.
And then we're going to come back and say we don't need that money anymore.
That's right. It's already out. Already.
Representative Weehead.
I've got a series of questions I've listed here since.
Go ahead.
Representative Parkinson asked us to hold our questions until the end.
Yes, that's fine. Go ahead with your questions.
You didn't hear that, Mr. Chairman. You were out of the room.
Well, Representative Agnes told me that when I came back, so I forgot it, though, didn't I?
Yeah.
Yes, I did. Yeah.
Chair,
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Representative Weehead.
I want to jump right to Section 12 on the tax, just so that I understand it. It does say in Section 12, 10 cents per quart of motor oil. And I looked for the definition of motor oil, and I don't see a definition, but I do see a definition for oil, and it says oil means gasoline. And I'm confused now. Do we need to add a definition for motor oil? Do we need to change the definition for oil?
Mr. Chair, Representative Weehidge, I think it's an oversight on our part. Those of us working with some national statistics on what is sold in terms of motor oil and other motor lubricants, assume everyone would know what motor oil is, but I think we should put a definition in.
Right.
Okay. Next question. Are we talking about just the type of motor oil you buy by the quart, or are we talking about bulk motor oil?
Let me answer that. I was going to maybe close with a few comments. That's one of them. It's all motor oil, and as the amendments become public knowledge, I'm sure we'll have groups in here protesting vigorously. For instance, a 55-gallon drum of motor oil that a farmer uses would instantly cost him $22 more. So you will have people in here. Another thing probably you will have is a surcharge on the tanks. It's a $50 surcharge. That isn't just the tanks at gasoline stations. That's all underground storage tanks, and that will include people who have no relationship to selling gasoline. And by the way, that $50 surcharge does not raise very much money compared to the tax on motor oil.
Mr. Chair?
That representative, we had Scott from one
more
yes, go ahead.
Just bear with me. In talking about the very beginning of the bill, we talked about $3,000 grant for, let's see, this was for the purpose of leak or tank tightness testing and soil assessment. How many facilities do we have in the state?
Mr. Chair, Representative Wehage, we have approximately 6,000 facilities.
6,000. So that, if everyone went to the max on that, that's 20, 18 million dollars.
Yeah, Representative Wehage, for the purposes of calculating the impact of the cost, we've assumed 1,500 facilities would apply for this program. The reason it's a lower number is some people already have upgraded their facilities and will have no need to go through this particular effort. As Representative Parkinson mentioned, some people may not want to go through it because they already suspect their facility is contaminated. So we've made a lower estimate of how many people would actually apply.
I see. And the other area I wanted to question you about was the funding, the 80% of 80. The maximum loan that would apply to would be like a $100,000 loan, and they'd pay the first $20,000, and then no, you're shaking your head no. $64,000 was actually mentioned in the bill.
Right. Mr. Chair, Representative Wehage, what we did is the department called around to find out what costs are currently being incurred to replace, say, a two-tank facility, a three-tank facility, a four-tank, and five-tank.
That was going to be my question.
Okay. For four tanks, to replace it without any financial assistance is about $105,000, according to the industry in Oregon who does this work. So, again, for purposes of illustration, we took a $100,000 project, set an applicant for a loan guarantee, we'll have to pay the first $20,000, and then the state will guarantee 80% of the $80,000 that would become part of a loan. It does not preclude someone from coming in and financing a $120,000 project. The maximum the state would guarantee is $64,000.
Okay. How many facilities does DEQ now estimate has a contaminated soil problem? We have 6,000 facilities. What's the estimate as to how many of those have a problem?
Mr. Chair, Representative Wehage, the only information we have to be able to give you an estimate is about 100 tanks a month are being removed from service. People are deciding they no longer need the tank for one reason or another. We're finding soil contamination and or groundwater contamination at about half the sites.
Are most of those tanks relatively old tanks?
Not necessarily, Representative. We had some people have put them in as recently as 5 years ago and have decided it's not in their interest to comply with these regulations and are removing these tanks.
And final question I've got on my list, the cost of soil remediation, as it's termed here, what is that running?
Mr. Chair, Representative Wehage, we're estimating that to be $10,000 or less. Up to $10,000.
Representative Jones.
You commented on the number of facilities, and you said that you thought we had about 6,000 facilities. Is that including the facilities that Representative Parkinson was mentioning, the storage tanks that are not really located at retail sites?
Mr. Chair, Representative Jones, that's correct. Altogether, any kind of tank that's regulated by this program, there are 19,000 tanks. There's an average of about 2.7 tanks per facility. And so you're a little above 6,000 statewide. But that could be a school district. It could be State of Oregon Highway Division maintenance shop. It could be an electronics business. About half the facilities are retail gasoline. About half the facilities are retail gasoline.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Parkinson.
We do have, and I think maybe you have in your packet, some charts that get into these numbers and dollars extensively. I don't know how deep you want us to go into it today. And it might be that others will want to talk generally that are going to testify, but your eyes might glaze over if Rich goes into all that today. We certainly could, but it might be better for.
Why don't we just let if they have questions, we can come up to come back to it. Representative,
yeah, Mr. Chair, maybe one thing that would help me is give me some sense of how much money we're yeah. talking about raising, and some snapshot as to how much money you see going out when we're in the middle of this thing.
Chair Cease, Representative Kiesling, attached in your folder, I do hope it's there. There's a one-page memo from me, a letter that we sent to Senator Hatfield, so you know we were pursuing that. Behind it is a definitive kind of breakdown, and it says motor oil.
Right, and I don't want to go line by line, as Representative Parkinson said.
Okay, 11 million probably.
11 million
with the tax.
Per year. Total.
No.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, Rich just told me he has a simplified chart that we haven't seen that he's having passed out.
Oh, right.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's 1.58.
Representative Jones.
You said 11 million from both the $50 fee and the 10 cent per quart, or what's the 11 million cover?
That was just the Chair Cease, Representative Jones, that was just for the tax on motor oil.
Right. Excuse me, we should really have a photograph of this.
Yeah. I know, I've never seen it quite like
I've never
this
seen
before.
So many of the tongues hanging out ready for.
I know. That's the heavy breathing at this end of the dais, Mr. Chair, is worrying me a little bit.
Maybe we can add to our fund by putting these on sale for those gentlemen.
Mr. Chair, Representative Jones, if you would turn to page 12 on what was handed to you, okay?
What we just got.
Yeah, yes. You'll find a table one, and for the moment, let's look at option one.
Option one.
Okay. And these are just some assumptions to give you a sense of how much money is needed to make the program work, and how many people would be benefited. For illustration, we've assumed somewhere we're going to be able to borrow $25 million, some startup money. The motor oil tax, 10 cents a quart, over four years, would raise $23,973,981. That's 4 years. Okay. The tax.
So it raises only about $6 million a year?
Correct. That's based on national sales figures for motor oils, out of some petroleum reports that we were able to obtain. Okay, the excess surcharge, the $50 per tank on 19,000 tanks for 4 years, would raise $3,230,000. We have assumed the tank population will decrease by 10% a year because of these rules, the federal rules.
Because of the federal rules.
Because of the federal rules. Okay, in terms of people that we believe the program can help, on the site assessment and tank testing, we've assumed we could help 1,500 facility locations, 1,500 businesses around the state, at a cost of $4.5 million. Those would be outright expenses. That money would be lost to the program. For hardship grants, the criteria, as you noted, are fairly tight. So we're only assuming 50 locations around the state would be eligible for a hardship grant. That's 75% up to $55,000. That would be $2,750,000.
Would that essentially be probably only one per community?
Yes. And principally in your rural areas, well, exclusively in rural areas. Okay, loans for those people who would choose to upgrade. We're estimating 100 locations may apply for a loan to upgrade at a cost of $2,508,800. For loans to replace, you'll note a fairly higher number, and the reason is, if given a choice, in the people who are doing this work tell us facilities are choosing to replace rather than upgrade. Because even to upgrade, they have to uncover their tanks to be able to apply the cathodic protection. Once they go through that expense, most of them are deciding to just replace the tanks and start with what they know. So that's why we've assumed a higher number will choose to replace. 500 at a cost of $30,720,000. So again, there are about 3,000 retail gasoline sites in Oregon. And even with the dollars we're thinking of raising, we would help 600 facilities with loans. Okay, the total grants and loans then, $40,478,000. Funds remaining in the account after the fourth year of the program, you'd have $25,497,78. But remember, you have a startup loan of $25 million, so net, at the end of 4 years, you'd have $490,000. Now, the reason we've shown 8 years is because of the loan guarantee provisions, after the fourth year, there's still money in the fund to cover the loans outstanding. And the last loan would be paid off after the eighth year. We've assumed here a five-year loan. And so after 8 years, after the upfront loan is paid, there would be $14 million that could be spent for other purposes. And we're proposing they
remain. That's largely because of interest?
Well, that's basically the reserves that are freed up.
Okay.
And we've estimated a cost for your understanding of what the tax credit implications are, buying down the interest rate to 7.5. Over the full 8 years of the program, there would be a general fund obligation of $7,095,247.
Where would the tax, I'm not clear where the tax credits come in.
We're subsidizing the interest rate, much like is being done with weatherization loans. And a lending institution can apply to the state for the difference between 7.5 and a non-subsidized interest rate.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Keasley.
What's the tax credit impact in 89, 91, 93?
It'll just take me a second. Mr. Chair, Representative Keasley, in the first year, it would approach about $1.5 million.
That's in just in 1989-91.
First biennium.
Right.
What was that figure again?
It would approach $1.5 million.
And then what's it in the 91-93?
For the first 4 years, it's $5,487,066.
So another $3.9 million.
Yes. The reason I hedged a little bit on the first 2 years is I don't have that summed, but I do have a sum for 4 years. Now, if the committee desires, I have all the detail that supports that option one, and I can hand that out to you today. But as Representative Parkinson said, it would take probably a half an hour to go through the detail.
Why don't you just give copies to Carol, and we'll come back to it.
I would close, Mr. Chair, by saying the reason we show you other options, you will note we have a minimum cash line shown. And under our option one, which was just a way to get started, the cash flow would never drop below $8 million in the fund. The implication of that is you could do one of several things. You could either lower the startup loan by $8 million, and then at some points the fund would be exactly at zero. Or you could help more people. And the option three shows you the maximum number of loans you could issue, 141 versus 100, and 705 versus 500. So option three maximizes the number of people that you could help. Option two shows the account going to zero, and all you would need in the way of a startup loan is $16,613,343. Option four shows no startup money, and here's where you see a dramatic reduction in the amount of loans you could give. You could only give 14 upgrade loans and only 57 replacement loans. And the reason being, you just don't have the cash flow to keep up with the rate that banks could push money out their doors.
And then let me ask you on option two, where you have 16 million startup and you have a million cash.